that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to The Geeky Bubble. I am your host, Jonah, and with me is the Omega to my wrecker, my mom, Maria.
Hello. Today, we're going to discuss the season 2 episodes of The Bad Batch, Faster, Entombed, and Tribe.
Yes. I remember at one point, this was like years ago, I want to say we were at a movie theater, and you were like, why is it tomb? Why is it not Tom?
Yes.
English is a weird language.
Yes, it is.
And so I was wondering whether you were going to say entombed, just out of habit.
No, because I when I read it, I said to myself, remember entombed, because that's how they say it.
You're right, that is. So these three episodes were pretty great overall. I really loved them. But they were also great for Omega's character. And I love how they showed how clever she can be, how childlike and innocent she can be, but also how open-minded she can be too. So like in Faster, we see her playing the Jarek with Wrecker at the beginning of the episode. And she knows how to strategize because we've seen her play that game before and we've seen her win that game. So it was cool how it was kind of like a foreshadowing of sorts of her actions later on in the episode, playing against the hustler guy that we meet, Malegi, I want to say that's his name. And, you know, in Entombed, we see her childlike wonder with Fee and her adventurous spirit.
Oh, she was like, oh,
I know,
treasure.
Yeah, I know, right? And in Tribe, she gets to hang around with someone her own age, and not only that, but I think that's the first time she was exposed to the Force and Jedi, because I don't think we've met Jedi, except for Caleb at the Kanan.
But that was at the beginning.
Yeah, that was at the
Omega
beginning.
Wasn't
exactly.
There.
So I think I want to say this was the first time I didn't get a chance to review the episodes prior to this, but correct me if I'm wrong. But what were your thoughts about Omega in these episodes and anything that stood out to you in particular?
Just her wonder. Like, everything was a wonder to her. You know, like, everything was a first. Even though situations have come before, it's sort of like she's looking at them in a different way. So everything was a wonder. And I love that. Even when situations were adult-like, you could still see the child in her.
Yeah.
Which was awesome to see.
I do love that. I do love. And that's not something that she's lost in the amount of time where, you know, they've been exploring and been exposed to very harsh realities. It's still very much intact, and I hope it remains intact for many, many, many years to come. And, you know, another person we get to focus on in Faster is Tech. And I love how Teo, as a droid, has a less robotic personality. He's a bit playful and humorous, while Tech, who is a human, has more of a robotic and logical personality.
Yeah, that was so awesome because you see them play out of each other, and Tech is very like logical and this and that, while Teo is like, oh, that's the problem with you humans.
Yeah, that's right. I really loved that.
Contrast,
yeah. And it was so much fun getting to see the spotlight on Tech and him being appreciated for something related to his technical abilities, but not necessarily just on his technical abilities. It was, you know, him racing, participating in this
like
race.
In the end, when everybody starts, Tech, he goes, ooh. And he goes with the two fingers and nods to everybody.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved that. I loved how everyone was cheering for him. It was such a great moment for him. you know, we also get to learn a little bit more about Sid and her hustler past. And that was very interesting.
Yes, it was.
And then one additional piece of information, you know, we find out that her full name is actually Citarin Scaleback. I mean, that's quite the name.
Yep.
But yeah, they don't mention in the episode what her past was like, but it's insinuated that she wasn't really all that great of a character.
No, she was very shady. And I saw the whole episode as, we keep saying that we hope that Sid, you know, keeps helping them and whatnot, but like this puts a little bit of doubt.
Yeah.
Because in the episode, Malegi tells them, she's not what you think.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn it.
And you watch your backs is what he said. Yeah. And
at that moment, I was like, man. I'm not seeing a good ending with this relationship.
Yeah, and I'm not, and like, I don't know who to believe. Like, do I believe this guy who could possibly just be messing with them? Yeah. Is he actually telling the truth? Or does he not believe that Sid has fully turned away from her hustler past?
Like, and the thing that gives me pause is the fact that Tech mentions, you know, this is not the first time that we have to do this, and it's becoming a troubling pattern.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And we know Tech analyzes patterns.
It's true, yeah.
So it's like, oh, man, is this the way they're telling us this is not going to end up well?
Right, right. No, that's a great point, the fact that Tech is very observant, and he's inputting all this information that they're experiencing. Like, how is he going, what calculations is he doing in his mind to predict what comes next?
And will this be one of those moments that I honestly haven't seen yet where Tech calculations are not right?
Oh, I know.
Are proven wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of little things that, like, oh my God, this is difficult.
I know.
They are bringing our attention to something.
Yes,
here.
Yes. And it's not, I know, I don't even have to look back to see people calling these episodes filler episodes.
Yeah.
I don't even have to look back because I know that's what some people have said. But they're really, not. They're giving you
little insights of what may happen in the future. And it's something to think about.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, what is going to happen here?
And you know, I really have to thank Babylon 5. Because I've been watching it. We've been watching it. Mommy's been rewatching it. I've been watching it for the first time. And this show, you start watching it and you think it's just like a regular sci-fi show. Doesn't really have an end game or anything. And slowly but surely, you see that things that happen in so-called filler episodes do play a much larger part down the line. And I was just amazed by how this web of little things that...
Yeah, they're just setting you up.
Yeah. And it's just, it made me appreciate those episodes that at a first glance may not have a larger piece to the puzzle, but man.
Yeah.
So now I've been looking back at Star Wars and all these other shows and movies I watch, and I'm like, you know, I don't know why I was so harsh on... Or why I had thought this, because there really was some sort of follow-up to whatever had been set up.
The little nods to what may come, and sometimes it's not even fully transparent that that's what you saw.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's there.
I know. So watch Babylon 5. It's so good. But going back to the Bad Batch here, I do wonder, though, if Sid is actually on, you know, trying to be a better person, what was the incident or what was the situation she found herself in that turned her away from her hustling ways? Like, I'm curious about that.
I think we may have gotten a little bit of that too in the beginning, because I think it's the way Omega talks and do things that sort of like pull Sid's eyes into the group. And I think it's the relationship with them that has sort of mellowed her out a bit when it comes to them.
So it's not something that happened years and years ago, but maybe recently, as them showing up.
Yes, yeah. Sort of like the moment she saw them, she saw, okay, this is a group I can get something out of. But then the relationship between Omega and Hunter started, you know, putting these vibes out there. She's sort of like, oh, wait, this is different. This is not a group that I can really just drop, because if I do, this child is gonna suffer. Because before, she just deals straight up with rough guys, you know? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what those rough guys are.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But now it's different.
I'd have to rewatch the, you know, everything up until now to like catch all those little moments.
But then at the same time, we're getting this little bits and pieces that are like, remember who said it.
Yeah, it's so curious. And yeah, and referring back to Omega playing with the Djarik game, like she really didn't know how this would all pan out. This was her taking a chance, a risk, pretty much what you would do.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, looking at a board game and you're like, well, this is a risk I'm willing to take to see if it pays off. But yeah, I really liked how you got to see that play out. And I also have to talk about the announcer of the race, because he was hilarious. Yep. He was voiced by Jonathan Lippo. And I thought he was so funny. And I just absolutely loved when he said Tech. Anything else on this guy? Is that his name? Tech? Just Tech? I love that. But then going back a little bit further, something I also appreciate about this episode is the relationship between Omega and Wrecker. And we see that here.
Yes.
And we also see it in the next episode, Entombed. And Wrecker is this huge, imposing guy, but he's really just a kid at heart.
Yeah. He will constantly be saying the same thing that she was saying.
Yes, yes.
With that same wonder.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you look at the child and you hear the child's voice saying the wondrous thing. And you, then you go up and see the big guy saying the same wondrous thing, but with this boy.
Yeah.
And you're like, huh?
It's adorable. I absolutely love him. And I also loved the part when Teo gets destroyed a second time. And then Wrecker picks up Teo and he's like, I don't think he's going to be able to race.
No, he kept pointing out the obvious.
Yes.
Sort of like nobody was realizing it, only him.
I love that, because I can identify with that. Like, I've done that where I've pointed out the obvious. I'm like, yeah, it's not just me realizing this. Other people are just as intuitive here. Oh, man. Was there anything else about this episode that you wanted to talk about, or something that captured your attention that we didn't discuss so far?
No, not even faster. Like I said, we have these little knots here and there to make us think about Sid. How is that going to play out in the future? We will have to see. But I found it very interesting that came across in that episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm super happy it focused on Tech, because so far we've seen him be like the computer guy, the getting them out of a sticky situation guy. But it was great to see him be in the spotlight for a different reason.
Yeah.
And so moving on to Entombed, we get to learn more about Fee in this episode. And she calls herself a treasure hunter, the liberator of ancient wonders. And in our last podcast episode, you talked about how she's a straight shooter in terms of how she expresses herself. But we weren't exactly sure whether we could trust her or not. So what do you think about her now?
I'm still a little bit wobbly about whether we can trust her or not, because of who she is. Remember our first most daring pirate.
Oh, Hondo.
Hondo.
Hondo,
you know,
Naka.
She, she gives me Hondo vibes. She does. You know,
it's so funny because in one of my notes, I put down that she kind of reminds me of Hondo.
Yeah.
In that she exaggerates and stuffs her stories with details that aren't necessarily true.
Yeah. And in the, it's sort of like, when push comes to shove, is she going to be a Hondo or is she going to be different? Because we know Hondo just will save his scheme first.
Yeah, only in other situations. But when it comes to Ezra, that's when we first see him
and
be true.
And in this episode, it's good to see how she is relating to Omega.
Yes.
More than the guys, yes. You know?
Yeah, I really
it's sort
love
of like
that.
She's sort of like connecting with Omega and the fact that Omega has this wonder in her.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. One of the things I really loved about this episode was just how Omega was eating up everything she was saying.
Yes.
And even mimicking. There was one at one point when I was rewatching the episode, I didn't realize that Omega was mimicking Fee, much like how she was mimicking Hunter in season one. To me, Fee wasn't deceiving her in a malicious way. She was just making things more grandiose than what they actually were. And I like to think that Fee recognizes the fact that, you know, Omega's a kid. And kids sometimes need to, they deserve to have their imagination sparked.
Yes. But yeah, it was nice in it. She also reminded me of this archaeologist type character that we saw.
Oh, yes. In Star Wars Resistance?
Yes.
She was a bit more serious, though.
No, yes. Yeah, yeah. But she had that thing of going after
treasures
yeah, yeah. and things. She reminded me of her in that way.
Yes, that's right. In that occupation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Mika Gray, her occupation was a bit more, let me find these things that could potentially be used by the bad guys and get rid of them completely. Whereas Fee is more of like, how can this benefit me?
How much money can I make about from this?
Right. But I do feel like the guys can trust her a little bit because she could have run off with the crystal thing.
Yes.
But she understood the dangerous situation that they were in and cooperated, even though she said, you owe me.
Yeah.
She cooperated. And I wonder, part of me wonders whether when she was hanging off the edge there, whether Hunter went looking for her because he thought she had run off.
Or because he thought maybe she needs help.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I want to say part of me kind of ships them. but it's just my inclination to ship things.
I like in the end when they're walking off from this whole
ordeal
and they're going to the ship and Fee and Omega go forward and she starts telling her a new story. And he just looks at both of them and goes like, okay,
really?
Here we go again.
Yeah. And I also like how Fee sees things from a different perspective because she didn't see this as a total loss. And neither did Hunter because I like when Hunter said, at least no one can ever activate this thing again. And then she said, so what you're saying is a good thing we came after all.
Yeah.
So I like how she spins her losses into wins.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think she's really entertaining. I think the guys can trust her. We will see. So, you know, we know Omega finds this compass. They go to this system called the Kaldor Trinary System. We have no clue who lived on this planet, who built this giant destructive machine, and what happened to the people who lived on this planet. But this episode is so Star Wars to me in that Star Wars is known for setting up something cool. Then they don't give us all of the details. And then they leave you wondering if this could possibly be connected or brought up in a different story down the line.
Yes.
Like, is this something we could possibly see again? Maybe.
Certainly. That one of the things about this monster, that's this robot thing, destroyer of worlds, because that's basically what we see it does.
Yeah.
Anything that moves. He went after...
poor Mel.
No, he went after poor Mel, you know, and went straight up. So the point of the energy when it comes out.
Yes.
It looks like these big weapons in the Star Destroyers.
Oh, okay. Yes. So, yes. Yeah, yeah.
So that it gave me those vibes.
Oh, of, I gotcha.
Like this, yeah. this is something that the Empire or the whoever before, you know, and or this is where they got it from.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting idea.
But yeah, that gave me those vibes when I saw it. But it was crazy because we know obviously this planet is uninhabited because of this thing.
Yeah.
It is obvious this thing went after and destroyed everything. But was it destroyed by its own people building the technology?
Right.
Probably for defense? Or was it built because somebody wanted the planet destroyed? And if somebody wanted planet destroyed, where are they? Yeah. What happened to them?
So many questions.
Yes.
This episode is a reminder that there's so many mysterious things within the Star Wars galaxy. And you know, even in our own world, we have mysterious things like the Stonehenge.
Yes.
Like, we know, sort of, after research and whatnot, that it served some kind of calendrical purpose, a solar calendar of sorts. But there's still a lot of theories and speculation out there regarding it. So, like, there's this air of mystery surrounding it. So I really like how they introduced us to something that's very mysterious, and you're not going to get any of the answers.
Yeah. Nope.
So I was going to ask you, do you like that they didn't give us the full story, or would you have preferred more details?
No, I'm perfectly fine with what I got. Like, it gives me a moment to like start thinking, like I just said, like that energy generator in the middle, it looks like, what if, could it be?
Right.
Like, because this is a system that obviously tech doesn't even know about it.
No.
Because it's an ancient.
Unheard of. And then it was 1,000 more than before the Republic. And the Republic's pretty old.
and that gives me pause to think, could this be how it all started? Could.
No idea.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? I also like how this episode is just a reminder to have fun. Even if you encounter a giant machine that can destroy and incinerate the world, the point is to have fun. and something else I really liked about this episode was the music. The music didn't have to go so hard, but it did.
And it did well.
It did.
Yes.
The Kiner team and the folks that they work with really outdid themselves because they were like, you want adventure and wonder? We're going to give you adventure and wonder. And then one last thing from me about this episode, the stories that Fi shares about the crystal and everything else that she is relating to Omega about mysteries and whatnot, all of that is like a game of telephone. She heard it from someone who heard it from someone else who then heard it from some other guy and so on. So the details and the truth surrounding that story are lost over time and they're just replaced with elements of fantasy and mystery.
It's sort of like what Tex mentions in the beginning when he's telling the story in the beginning of the episode. Like, this story changes with every time she says it.
Every time. And she probably says it to different people, and then those people take it to other people, and then those people take it to other people. So, yeah, it just goes on, and it's just different versions.
And it's just a thing for you to think about it. Like, so many points in our history, so many things that we know as legends or possibilities or part of the actual story, you know what? It may not necessarily be
exactly
the actual story because it's being told and retold from the perspective of the winner and the loser and everybody in between.
So true. So anything else you want to share about Entombed before we talk about Tribe?
No, I'm good with that one.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed it. It's like Indiana Jones kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I love, actually, one of the, when she discovers that putting the...
Omega?
The Omega discovers that putting the compass in the wall can make it work, and it actually does. She throws a stone across it. And it reminds me of Indiana Jones checking to make sure.
Yeah, I do love that. I do. They really got the adventurous vibe right in this episode.
That's good.
And so in Tribe, you know, we see an old friend and Mommy. How excited were you to see Gunji again?
Well, you were there.
I was there. And at first you thought, Chewbacca? and then you were like, oh, because you couldn't remember his name exactly, but you knew who it was.
Yeah.
It was so cool. I wish I had captured that. Like everything else, I wish I had captured it on video. But yeah, it was so great to see him. But then it also makes you wonder, like, oh, what happened
to the other
kids? Oh, no. Oh, my heart. And then
And I just kept saying, freaking Anakin.
Yes, that's right. I was just going to say how Mommy just spent most of the episode cursing out Anakin and Palpatine and the Empire. And she was just like, I hate all of them. I hate them.
He killed younglings.
But what was also really cool about this episode is the fact that we are finally seeing the Bad Batch on Kashyyyk. So back when Clone Wars was quote unquote canceled or ending, winding down, one of the unfinished arcs that they never got a chance to show us was the Bad Batch on Kashyyyk. And I like how they took elements from that story, because at the time it took place during the Clone Wars, so they were fighting separatists. So they took elements from that arc and they brought them into this episode post Order 66. Elements like Babwa Venomor, who is the Trandoshan who gets his comeuppance in the end, the Wookiees communing with the trees, and then the ape lizards. And there were a few other things, too, I can't remember now. But, yeah, I was just like, oh, yes, finally we get a version of this story.
Yes.
And I also like that Wrecker had referenced them being on Kashyyyk before. So that story could have also happened, just in a different way. But, yeah, pretty cool for us Clone Wars fans. But what's even sadder about Gunji's story is that the fact that he was, you know, taken as a kid. So he didn't have a physical connection with Kashyyyk.
And he didn't have a full memory
of what
it meant to be a Wookiee and live in his own planet, in his own home world.
So he didn't know it as all that well. And, you know, he says that he saw it in dreams, that he felt it through dreams. But he didn't grow up there because of the fact that he had been taken by the Jedi. So not only did he lose this family that he was adopted into and the Jedi Temple, which became his home, but he's also walking into a somewhat foreign place for the first time in who knows how long. And that's another emotional layer to add to his story. Yeah. What a way to punch us in the chest.
In the gut.
In the gut, you know? Yeah. And I wonder whether we'll also see or find out more about who was the person looking to buy Gunji. Like, it was placed there in a way where I'm like, is there going to be a follow-up to that?
Yeah, because that was interesting. See, in the prior episode, I really didn't need the whole story about that plan it told to me. But on this episode, it was like a prick with a needle, like, ooh. What's that?
Yeah.
Like, who is buying him?
Yeah.
Why?
Yes. I'm curious whether it's the Empire or someone working for the Empire who's after Jedi. I don't know. And I really am curious to find out. And that could easily be like a little 4-issue comic.
Is it somebody trying to save Jedi?
That too, Mommy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you should write this comic. What? That is a brilliant idea. Yeah, I can totally see that. Someone like Quinlan Vos, who, as we know in Obi-Wan Kenobi, was, you know, still inoperable. Well, I don't know whether he was, I think he was still around, the implication at least. But yeah, he was helping with getting Jedi underground to safer places or for sensitive people. Or just people in general who needed help. But yeah, I'm so curious. Now you got me. You got the wheels turning in my head.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. And I also really love that Yana is their leader, this elderly lady. You know, they could have gone with a tough, scarred warrior. But it was really fascinating to see this sweet elderly lady being their leader. And she was almost, to me, like a physical manifestation or a representation of the planet itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's obviously that their leader, by this episode, that their leader is somebody who has a very deep connection to the planet.
Yes.
Because it's part of their beliefs. So it will make sense that their leader will be somebody spiritual as opposed to warrior-like, which they somehow are. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I like that. I like that there's a balance in that sense that, yes, we are warrior, but we're also close to nature. We have a spirituality that guides us.
Yes. Yeah, I really love that about the Wookiees. And Echo says to Hunter, the Wookiees were our allies for years. We have to help them. And I like how this situation they're in is like a stepping stone to them potentially joining something much bigger, that larger picture we had talked about last time. But maybe not as a whole team, but definitely Echo. And I was wondering whether you got that feeling.
No, yes, I did. It was like in my head, I went like, yes. So a little bit of keep twisting it in there. Maybe he get it soon, you know?
Yeah. And so I like the Wookiees were asking the trees for help. You know, they would commune with them. And I like how the guys just, they weren't resistant to the whole trees making decisions angle.
Like Hunter just went, the trees say what? Okay.
Yeah, I know. They went with it and they went along with it. And it must be because they've worked with Jedi before, but also, you know, these are the people who've lived here the longest. They know their planet the best. So yeah, they're the ones who are tactically better to lead us in whatever's going to happen. and it's probably nothing new to them. And of course, I'm a sucker for the nature fighting back kind of stories, yes, like the Lord of the Rings with the Ents and Avatar with Eowa. And Kashyyyk is essentially a living, breathing character all on its own. So it was really cool getting to see the planet take part in the fight through like the jungle spiders.
Yes. I like the scene in the end when I'm pretty sure Ganji made Venomore do the circle of fire around him
because to box him in.
But then it was nice to see how the spiders took advantage of that and came down and told, sort of like in a forced way, told him, leave it to us.
Yeah.
We'll take care of him.
Yeah, that's a really cool.
Yeah.
And I also like how he shut his lightsaber down because it refers back to the beginning of the episode when Wrecker was about to shoot the spiders and Ganji or Hunter, I forget who it was that said, as long as you don't show a threat, you'll be fine. So, yeah, I love how it all went down in the end. Oh, and one of the things I also really liked about the fight that was happening, Wrecker's Wookiee growls.
Oh, my God. he went totally Wookiee.
Yes, he did. He did go totally Wookiee. I loved how he was also enjoying that drink.
Yeah.
Like, he could live there and live the best life. And then you have Hunter's quote at the end when he says, they're both just kids, but they don't get to be, referring specifically to Omega and Ganji. And it really strikes a chord, that line, because that's the case for most of the children in Star Wars, the children characters that we've met, like Ezra, Omega, and even Kel and Ayla, those two kids from Star Wars Resistance. But it's also the case for a lot of kids today whose childhoods are being stolen by adults and their horrible and terrible decisions on a daily basis. Yes.
It's like we all say we have to protect the children, but what are you really doing to do that? Because a child is not just that physical small being that you see in front of you. A child is the wonder, the playfulness, the innocence. And what are you really doing to protect that?
Yeah.
You know, saving them for what? If they're losing all that, what are you really doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And Yana, she said, as this child has found his new home, perhaps one day we all will find a new path. To which Hunter replies, hopefully one far away from war. And it's such a bittersweet ending because you know that won't be the case. Yeah. You know, at this point in the series, we're about 18-ish years or so away from A New Hope. So that's 18 years of people living under the tyranny of the Empire. And that doesn't even count the 3 or 4 years that happened after Rogue One and A New Hope of actual war. So it's like the future is super bleak, man. This is what happens when you live in a franchise called Star Wars. Yeah.
That also gives us a little hint of what he may decide to do also as well.
Oh, yes.
Because it's sort of like he's starting to come to the realization that no matter what I do, war is coming to us.
Right. They're not going to be able to escape it.
So am I going to keep running away from it or am I going to take a position and do something about it?
Right. Oh, and now I'm curious. I mean, I've seen the next two episodes. I have no idea what comes after that. And I'm like scared, especially with the third season on the horizon, because it sounds like it's going to be coming soon. So,
oh, boy.
I know. So any other thoughts you had about Tribe or the previous episodes we've talked about?
No, I'm just so happy I saw Gunji.
Yeah, I hope, oh my gosh. Because we did find out that some of the Wookiees went into deeper parts of the jungle. So this little outpost isn't it. There's more hidden away. So here's hoping Gunji is able to find people who are related to him, but even if that's not the case, he has a family here.
At least he's with his own people.
With his own kind, yeah. So at least that, you know, there's some happiness, some satisfaction with knowing that. Yeah, that's it for today's episode. So in our next episode, we'll be discussing the clone conspiracy and truth and consequences. Ooh. I know, right?
Yeah. Until next time, may the force be with you.
Always.